This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 226 of the Observe Tech podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com and the super site for Windows. Good to be with you on this Saturday, the 22nd of April. Wow, just a week or so left in April already. We're already 4 months into this new year. So, got a good show for you today. Lots of Windows 10 news. This kind of seems to be the norm, but we got a lot of news out of Microsoft this week, not just about the next version of Windows, but some very specific information about when to expect updates to Windows 10 and Office because of that. So it's very interesting to hear a new plan for release schedule and support schedule. Want to start off, though, by talking a little bit about Android. Now, I've been on Android now for, I guess, 18 months or so. I have tried a couple different devices. I tried the most recently, and the one I currently use is the LG Nexus 5X, which is great because it is it's kind of like the base handset, so it always gets the releases when they're available. I always get the monthly security updates. I always get the big version upgrades when they come out very early on. But it's only got 2 gig of RAM, 16 gigabytes of memory. So while it's a 5.2-inch screen, if I remember right. So while it is a great screen and the device has worked well for me, and of course I've got it full of Microsoft apps and services and stuff like that, but it's long in the tooth. Well, starting Monday, I am going to get a chance to take a closer look at the new Samsung Galaxy S8. So I'm really looking forward to this device. It's a quad-core device. It's everything I'm reading about the screen and just the experience with the device overall is just tremendous. I even went and watched the torture video that some guy did where he totally tore up one and scratched it up and did all this stuff to try to prove how well it will tolerate normal use, which sometimes just boggles my mind. But so on Monday, I will be getting this Galaxy S8 to take a closer look at. The one thing I'm not getting is I'm not getting the one that comes from the Microsoft Store, because you know Microsoft Store is selling the Galaxy S8, but they're selling it with their own image. So what you do is you go in the store, you buy the phone, and then right then and there they will image it with this Microsoft-specific image. And of course, all that's going to do really is it's going to put all of Microsoft's apps and services right there front and center. Well, I can do the same thing. All of us can do the same thing. I did it on my LG Nexus 5X. And I will do it on the Galaxy S8 as I start to take a closer look at that. What's been great about the 5X, actually funny about the 5X, is I don't use Cortana. I actually use the OK Google. I found that the OK Google has worked very well. I've used it on a couple trips. I've used it routinely in the car for voice-free control, for either making a call or doing looking things up or something like that. So I'm looking forward to checking out this Galaxy S8. Not so sure about the Bixby thing. That's their own kind of intelligent service that's there. But I will most definitely be sharing that experience with all of you via the podcast, via Twitter, and also I'll most likely write about that experience. I will be writing about that experience on the Supersite for Windows as well. So stay tuned for that. That's going to happen. It's scheduled to arrive from the company like on Monday. And then it is Saturday, it is the weekend, so I thought I'd point this out. When I powered up my Xbox, I had another update, in fact, to my Xbox that's in the alpha preview ring this morning waiting for me. But the Karate Kid, 1984's Karate Kid, the original movie, is a free rental this weekend. So if you're interested in checking out an old classic, what's that, 33 years old now, make sure if you're listening to the show this weekend, which is good for you, I appreciate you listening anytime, but if you're a weekend listener, then you're going to find out that rental's available, and you can go to the Windows Store on Windows 10 on any of your Windows 10 devices and rent that movie for free. Also, something really cool yesterday as I was putting together my notes for this, one of the articles I'm going to talk about from Microsoft a little bit later on are some awards they're going to pass out at Build. And there's a voting process going on, and you have to register for the site and all that to vote. But there was a really cool new piece of Ninja Cat art. Very different from the Ninja Cat we've been seeing with the various graphics and stickers and things of that nature. So it's a really cool Ninja Cat. I shared a lot of this over on Twitter over the last day, over yesterday, and I even took this character and stuck him on the Windows XP Bliss wallpaper standing on the hill because he's holding a fluttering Windows flag. And then I also took it and stuck it on the Hero Windows 10 wallpaper. It's the one without the smoke. Remember last year when Windows 10 Cloud got discovered, they found this wallpaper that didn't have the smokiness to it. Well, I took this new Ninja Cat character and I stuck him on there as well. Made that available for download from my OneDrive as a shared file. So I've got a link here in the show notes. It's the top one that if you are interested in grabbing those wallpapers to be able to have this Ninja Cat on your own system, then you can certainly go download that and check it out. So let's start talking a little bit about what's been going on this past week. You may remember a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, or maybe it was Patch Tuesday. Microsoft has finally blocked the ability to install Windows 7 and 8.1 on new silicon, on new chipsets. And, of course, that caused they've been talking about it for over a year, but it caused a little bit of an uproar, as everything Microsoft does seems to do. It gets that initial reaction from the public. So this was a known thing. It was known to be coming. They implemented this on this past month's Patch Tuesday on April 11th. So what happened within the next week or so? Somebody figured out a way to bypass that block on those devices, on those chipsets. And I got to tell you, I said this on Twitter, and I will say it to you right now. There could be nothing stupider that you could do. This is stupid action, not stupid people, okay? People do things that aren't smart. People do things that are stupid. Doesn't mean they're stupid, but this is a crazy, crazy thing to be doing. Why would you run a script or a patch or something on your Windows system that you trust to be have integrity and not be vulnerable in any way so that you can get Windows 7 or 8.1 on this newer silicon? So you wouldn't do that. I mean, just a sane person just would not do this, and I just can't say it enough. This is not a very smart move to do. Why would you do this? It is, you know, Windows. Let's talk about Windows 7 and 8.1 for a minute. Windows 7 has less than 3 years of extended lifecycle support left. In January 2020, Windows 7 will not get any more patches, security patches. That's the mode it's in right now anyway. It's in that the first 5 years you can get new features, and then the second 5 years, which is called extended support, you're just going to get security fixes and updates and patches like that. So you got Windows 7 with less than 3 years of life left to it. You got Windows 8.1, which also is in a very similar boat, but just a few years later, it will fall down and fall out of lifecycle support. So the reality is, and some of the news I'm going to talk to you about in this show, the reality is Windows 10 is the future. You're going to have to get on board with Windows 10 at some point or another. I mean, okay, you can go to Linux, you can go to some other distribution of something, you can go to Mac OS if you want to pay the high prices for the lagging, slow hardware. But the bottom line is you're going to have to make a choice. Now, the vast majority of users aren't going to be affected by this. Your everyday mom and dad, aunt and uncle, grandma, grandpa are not going to go looking for a patch so that they can install Windows 7 or 8.1 on a brand new system that arrived with Windows 10. Nope. Normal everyday users are going to move forward and use Windows 10. This patch, this thing, is probably targeted more towards enthusiasts, people who understand their computers, who understand making tweaks and changes to their system. And that also brings me up to say, well, why would you do this? I'd really love to hear a good reason why you would do this. Why is it so important to have Windows 7 or 8.1 on that newer silicon? I don't think anybody's going to 8.1 on this, okay? I think it's about Windows 7. Windows 8.1 barely got adopted as it was. It was not a very well-liked system, as you know, but it's still out there and it's still supported. But again, the numbers are very small. So why would you do that? Is it just about your concerns about privacy and telemetry and other things like that on Windows 10? Microsoft's being very transparent about all that these days. They even reduced the amount of data they collect. They even came out and told you the categories of data they're collecting. And here's the reality. In 3 years, you're either going to move to Windows 10 or you're going to move to something else like Linux, Unix, Mac OS, whatever, 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 all the normal things that people say, I'll do this if Microsoft X. So it's not a very smart move. I've got the link to the story here so you can read more about it, but I'd really love to understand why people would choose to do such a thing and possibly put their systems in a vulnerable position by throwing this patch on them. Because guess what? The patches and stuff that Microsoft are going to release for these new devices that you've just patched so that you can run Windows 7 on them, they aren't getting the Windows 7 updates, specifically driven to Windows 7 updates. They're only getting the Windows. The reason they're making this change is because they want to support the newer features in Windows 7 on the newer hardware, and make that a more streamlined process. So, okay, enough of that, off my box. But I'd love to hear from somebody about why you would do this if you choose to. The big news out of Microsoft this week, though, a couple of big items came out, but this was probably the one that caught everybody off guard because it wasn't expected. We're kind of in our, you know, we just had Windows 10 Creators Update come out. It came out on the 11th of April officially. A week earlier, it was out early for enthusiasts and advanced users and early adopters. And now we're in that first month of the official rollout. We've already started the testing for Redstone 3. That's the next major feature update for Windows 10 that's expected this fall, or at least we thought at the time. Today we know something different, but it was expected this fall. Already had three builds released, one week between the unofficial and official release, one the week of the official release of the Creators Update, and then we had one this past week. So Redstone 3 is already well into its path towards its major feature update later this year. Well, what Microsoft did was they have announced that there is a change in how they're going to release and support not only Windows 10, but Office 365 Pro Plus. Now, Office 365 Pro Plus, that kind of caveat to it, and also included in here is System Center Configuration Manager, by the way. All three of those kind of play together. System Center Configuration Manager is a tool that IT pros and admins use to ship updates out to their end users across their network. It has to be updated to reflect the changes in Office 365 and Windows 10 in order to efficiently and properly do that. So these three products are now going to be on a standard release schedule of March and September of each year. And then the support cycle will be 18 months long for each version. So 18 months after that update is released, say, for instance, next month they are expiring Windows 7 initial release, version 1507. That is going to expire next month, actually 22 months after it came out. But they got to start. This is the first cycle of putting to bed an old version of Windows 10 that's no longer going to get supported. Then that means the November update and the anniversary update and the Creators update is in the cycle for support, current branch for business. So, and then this fall in September, when we get Redstone 3 and the next feature update for Office 365 and System Center 2 there for the IT pros, that means the November update should roll out of support. I don't think they're going to remove the November update because it's right there too. So next month is 18 months for it. I don't think they're going to retire both of them right on top of each other. Maybe they'll choose mid-cycle. We don't know yet. They haven't said. But so we're going to finally get caught up to a point where when one release comes out in March, that will mean that the release from 18 months earlier will expire support. And then they'll keep moving forward like that. So this is good. This is a great thing because it's going to make a big difference for stability. It means IT pros still have the option to only ship one update a year because they have the ability to defer updates. So it still gives them plenty of time to look at the compatibility and test it within their own market, in their own house, in their own systems, which hopefully every company is starting to develop their own little testing program, kind of like insiders. And then it'll just start to pick up that cadence, and that's the cadence we will be on for the foreseeable future. Now, an interesting little thing here that has been pointed out this past week is the Office 365 Pro Plus updates. What they say in the blog post for the Office, this Pro Plus updates piece, and I'm going to find the content right here. Okay, so there's three key little notes about this change when it comes to Office 365, and they are now referring to, you know, the standalone version of Office that you buy off the shelf, or you buy get a code just for a single computer, right? One computer, one install. They're calling that the legacy version of Office. So you have Office 365, that's the subscription-driven version of Office, and then you have Office Legacy, which is that standalone install version. So three keynotes: Office 365 Pro Plus or Office Perpetual and Mainstream support required to connect to Office 365 services. So starting in 2020, this is months after Windows 7 expires, by the way, October 13th, which happens to be the Navy birthday, Office 365 Pro Plus or the Office Perpetual and Mainstream support will be required to connect to Office 365 services. Office 365 Pro Plus will deliver the best experience, marketing. So that means they will support connections from Office Perpetual, and I think that Perpetual is being interchanged with Legacy. So I think what they've referred to as Perpetual is that standalone version of Office that you install the Office suite. But you only get updates every 2 to 3 years, right, when they release updates or patches. Office 365 commercial only. This update does not change our system of requirements or policies for the Office Perpetual client. So, yeah, they're using the term Perpetual and Legacy together. So, where some are reporting that Office Perpetual will be required to have a subscription in 2020 may be true because they're going to be required to, customers are not ready to move to the cloud by 2020. We will also support connections from their Perpetual and mainstream support. So, I think there still needs to be a little bit of clarity here on whether that means it's all subscription-based in 2020. That's what some people are tweeting at me. Or will this mean that you can still use those products, that Perpetual Office, until it falls out of support to be able to connect to your services and stuff like that? And maybe they mean Office 365 services. I mean, it really just isn't very clear. This is their more than 3-year notice to give IT time to plan and budget for the change. Until this new requirement goes into effect in 2020, Office 2010, Office 2013, and Office 2016 Perpetual clients will still be able to connect to Office 365 services. So it does, see, that statement right there kind of says that come October 2020, you're going to have a subscription to be able to connect to Office services. So that's a subscription-based service. I mean, it's kind of been writing on the wall over the years as they've more and more grown Office 365 and grown those services, is that it's going to become a subscription-based service. I mean, think about it. When you compare the price of what Office Perpetual costs, if you don't get an upgrade version, you're talking about a few hundred dollars for an Office suite, and compare that to Office 365, for instance, and I'll just talk about Home for right now, is I get 5 users on that. That can be shared with 5 different people in my family or whoever I choose to share it with, and they all get the Office suite, they get the 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage, they get Skype minutes, they get other things that come with the subscription. Same thing goes for an enterprise level business who are paying on a per user basis instead of just buying the licenses and then using the licenses up. So I think in the long run, this could result in an overall cost savings to things. So the 2 updates a year, 18 months of support, and System Center Configuration Manager will also be in sync with those 2 products because it's so important to the process of getting it out there. So big changes when it comes to Windows 10, Office 365, and of course System Center Configuration Manager, sorry. So it'll be very interesting to watch that. You know, it's going to crunch down the development window because they had about 3.5 months between the initial release of Windows 10 in July of 2015 and the November update in November 2015. Then the next update after the November update came the following August, almost 8 months and 3 weeks later. So a long time they had to work on the anniversary update. And then the Creators update had very similar, just over 8 months, a couple weeks shorter, of support or development time between last August and the release this month on 11 April. So that means that the window for development is now a little compact. It's about a quarter of the length shorter. So they actually have 6 months from March to September, but some of that is going to be taken up with final code testing and things like that. So maybe 4 to 5 months of development window before they're testing the final code or very close to final code for release. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all kind of maps out over the next this next cycle. We were already expecting a release this year. We can now say Redstone 3, whatever it's going to be called, will be available in September of 2017, although that could technically be from 1 to 30 September, anywhere in the month. And then the other thing is we're in a 5-month window of that update coming out. So this is about the same time that Microsoft has revealed the focus of the update. So you had the November update, which is just the November update. Then you had the anniversary update, and then you had the Creators update. I think the event we have coming up in early May in New York City, the education-related event, might just be the window when they might announce what the focus of this next update is going to be. Could it be education-related? We already think they're going to announce the new Windows 10 Cloud and a device of some type of a clamshell laptop that will run that software, run that OS, an OS that will only install Windows Store apps. So could they very well say this is education is going to be the feature focus for the next feature update for Windows 10? We will find out in just over a week. I'll be there in New York City. I'll fly up on the 1st, and then on the 2nd of May, we will have that event. All right, so moving on down the line. Wow, we've only been through three things, and I've been talking for 20 minutes. But it's important stuff. This is really big deal stuff, so I want to make sure that you go to the links, you read this stuff, and you read it for yourself and interpret it and look at it and figure out how it might impact you or not. They're really putting this out as an enterprise-focused change. But for consumers who are looking for those Windows 10 updates, we now know they're going to come in March and September. If you're an Office 365 subscriber, consumer, which is still a commercial service, you're probably going to see your Office 365 updates not arrive every month anymore. They're going to arrive every 6 months, just like they will for enterprises now. Some of the things I wrote about this past week about Windows 10, setting up dynamic lock. On SuperCypher Windows, I'm starting to do galleries in conjunction with videos for most of my demos and my examples and my how-tos. Now that I've been hired on full-time as the senior content producer, I now have more capabilities available to me to be able to expand out into those areas. And you may see some very video-specific things. And you may see some overlap between galleries that show you the how-to screens as well as a video to go along with it. And someday down the road, we think we're going to do some kind of a podcast to talk about tech for SuperCypher for Windows. I am currently in the process of working on our first episode for the IT Pro podcast that we're going to do over on Windows IT Pro site. And so we got lots going on, a lot changing. So keep your ear out on my Twitter for all of those things. But anyway, did a video and gallery for how to set up dynamic lock. If you hadn't heard about this, this is the feature that allows you to take and pair a Bluetooth device, such as your phone or a wearable, with your Windows 10-based device. And then when you walk away from that device with that Bluetooth enabled paired thing, it will lock your screen. So some people call it Windows goodbye. So that's one I did a thing on. I also did app folders on the start screen. I did a gallery about the GetOffice app that has really changed in the Creators Update. It's no longer just a big advertisement to Office 365, although there are still elements of that there of telling you about the Office 365 service. But it now gives you direct link into your apps, your installs, your programs, your documents, the things you've created in it, and things of that nature. And then because we got new builds this week for Windows 10 Redstone 3, we got a new build for PC 16179. And on the mobile side in the Feature 2 branch, remember we talked about this last week, Feature 2 is where mobile has moved out of the Redstone branch. And it's on its own track of development right now. For whatever reason, we don't know if they're changing something in the core that can't be involved with the PC branch, and the things will merge later. I think something like that will happen. Many people are writing this off as possibly the last update for Windows 10 Mobile, and I guess that's feasible because a little bit later on, we're going to talk about news from Intel that indicates the first Windows 10 on ARM devices will be available in the fourth quarter of this year, late this year. Which means we could then be moving away from Windows 10 Mobile to Windows 10 on mobile. Very distinct difference with the on there, meaning these ARM-based devices that might also have cellular capabilities or virtual SIMs that Microsoft has talked about before, replacing Windows 10 Mobile as we know it right now. So there's still a lot to be understood. I think build starts on the, the 10th of May, 10, 11, 12 May in Seattle. I will be up there for that. I get up there on the Monday, the 8th, actually, because we have an event on the 9th. But I think build should be where we hear some concrete news about where that's headed. I think Microsoft, I said it on last week's podcast, it's time for Microsoft to just step up to the mic and be clear and concise about where Windows 10 Mobile is going. We kind of see it already. We already see that, you know, the OS is just kind of it's on the same path as the PC, but not getting all the same features. And so there's no parity there. Windows 10 on ARM, which could be run on mobile devices, would have feature parity because it's Windows 10. And then on the ARM side, that version of the OS has the emulation capabilities to emulate, so to run desktop apps, x86 apps. So we've got that going on. I think, again, we're going to hear a lot about that at build. So lots going on in the next few weeks. Microsoft released their to-do list service into public preview this past week. You might remember a couple years ago they bought Wunderlist, or the company that built Wunderlist, and then Wunderlist is still out there. getting a few updates. However, Microsoft's to-do list, or to-do, that's called to-do, Microsoft to-do, is eventually going to replace Wunderlist. And I've got it installed across all my devices. Everything seems to be syncing okay. I like a lot of the features. It's, you know, once you figure out, it's not intuitive to figure out, for instance, that you have to have a date assigned to a task in order to then create a recurring task. So you got to know that. It synced up to my Outlook desktop program right away. It syncs across all the devices I put it on. I have the app on my Android. I have the app on Windows 10 mobile phones that I'm testing with the latest Insider release. And it works. So far, so good. Everything works very well. So that's in preview, and you can actually go download that now. And it initially was reported that it only worked with Exchange-hosted accounts or Office 365 accounts, but actually works with any Microsoft account now. So that's easy to do. I wrote about using the reset PC or fresh start options for troublesome systems, talked about the difference between the two of them. If you don't know, reset PC gives you an option to keep your files, but I always get this confused because under Windows 8.1, remember, we had refresh and reset, and they did the opposite thing. So with reset, you get a choice. Keep it all, keep all your documents, keep your settings, and just reset the device, remove all the apps and the programs, or get rid of everything. And then Fresh Start takes it one step further, and it downloads a fresh copy of Windows 10 off the web to use for the base install. That means if you're on an OEM device, it will not use the image that's on the device, which typically contains a lot of their desktop software and things like that. So you got Reset PC and Fresh Start. Did a review on those. Mentioned app folders in the Get Office link. And then Microsoft has been very, very busy talking about the Windows 10 Creators Update through their official blog. And we've got 5 ways to get started with Paint 3D. Again, Creators Update, the real push was 3D, but we don't have that cool little app for the phone to scan in objects. Although, did you know that there's a way to take a Kinect, use the USB adapter to plug it into a computer, and then use a piece of software to scan stuff in? I thought that was pretty cool. I just had to lean back and put my Alexa Echo Dot on mute because every time I say computer, she wants to do something. All right, let's see. Paint 3D, right. So Creators Update has come out. Paint 3D is, of course, part of that, but it's kind of gotten pushed into the background, in my opinion. Microsoft Edge has become a much more mature platform. It's certainly much more stable in Creators Update. I've read others talk about this on social media. But they did a whole week's worth of blog post about getting the most out of Microsoft Edge. They talked about the fact that it's the only browser you can stream Netflix in 4K. It's got the ebook capability built into it now. That was a new feature in the Creators Update. It talks about personalizing the web, which means your tabs, your favorites and things like that. And then it talks about getting started with that browser overall. So there's a good week's worth of posts to read and catch up on Microsoft Edge. I will say this again, and I've said this to you all before, and I've written about this before. Microsoft Edge stability is great. Maturing the platform is great. However, right now they are still closed door when it comes to browser extensions for this platform, so that it's only by invite or by partnership or something like that. And in fact, we did get a couple of new extensions in the last couple of weeks. I still need to write about those. But until they open the door and allow more developers to get their extensions in, there are going to be people who can't adopt Edge because they don't have X extension. So while we have some useful ones, I use Edge as my daily driver. There are a couple of back-end business-related sites that I have to use Firefox. But right now, it's growing and it's doing very well. But it's got to get better. There's no doubt about it. And one way to get it better is to get those extensions out there. Let people grow the extension ecosystem. This blog post kind of caught everybody off guard as well, is that apparently Microsoft and Gmail accounts are starting to work together. Now, initially when I read this, I was like, cool, finally, Google and Microsoft are working together on something. Well, I guess that might not necessarily be the case. You know, they have slowly been transitioning everybody's Outlook.com accounts to the new features such as Focused Inbox, other, you know, connections in there for services, you know, having other deliveries, and you can get these add-ons that allow you to track different things in your email account. Well, basically what this does, I thought this was Google and Microsoft finally starting to play nice, but it's not. what Microsoft is doing in order to do this, they're going to ask permission to sync a copy of your email, calendar, and contacts to the Microsoft Cloud. Now, whether they do this to a sudo outlook.com account or what, I don't know. You don't get a new outlook.com email account out of it, but what they do is by syncing this, the copy of your email, calendar, contacts to the cloud, they basically use your Gmail credentials to go get the content, put it in the Microsoft Cloud, and then connect you to that data through the Mail and Calendar app. And that's why they are able to do things like Focused Inbox and to help you add all these other rich features that are part of the app. I mean, that's an app. Mail and Calendar have really grown a lot and matured a lot also. They're not part of the core RS. They get developed by their own team. So we get updates to that on a regular basis, usually at least monthly, I think. So it's great. It's going to roll out over the next few weeks. You'll get a prompt to authorize this new sync to the personal cloud of your Google data, and then it will implement those features, the focused and other stuff right then from there. So pretty cool. I wish there was more cooperation here. I really do. Microsoft is clever and have worked a way around, and you're giving permission to Microsoft to grab your data from Gmail and to use it this way. So there should not be any reason that Google would change or block this permission because you've granted this permission. But in this battle back and forth of these guys, who knows? That could happen. I wish Google and Apple would be more forthright with their services and apps across all the mobile platforms, and not just mobile platforms, Windows 10. Just Windows 10, a desktop that serves at least 400 million users right now, and even more most likely. But they don't. Microsoft, on the other hand, has got their services and apps on Google and iOS platforms. They've embraced that mobility of the experience type thing. I know to the frustration of their Windows 10 mobile users, but the reality is they have gone to where the customer is. I wish that Google and Apple would do more of the same, but we'll have to wait and see if that happens. Windows Developer Awards. So you remember earlier I mentioned this new Ninja Cat character. And the reason I found it was that this blog post pointed me towards the Windows Developer Build 27 portal and what they're allowing developers to do this year that can't be in attendance. And technically, even if you're going, you can still do this. They have a site that you can do an RSVP, basically sign in and say, I want to get this data. And they will give you heads up and links to the live stream for the keynotes, the side sessions. Content will be aggregated there as well, so you can create your own content, your own groups of content from Build to either look later or to share with others and things like that. But this year, they're doing their first ever Windows Developer Awards. And so these awards are going to go out to community developers who've built what they say exciting UWP Universal Windows Platform apps in the last year and published them in the store. So it's going to have four categories. The App Creator of the Year, that's an app that leverages the latest Windows 10 capabilities. The Game Creator of the Year, same idea, Xbox to PC and vice versa, however the platform works, the gaming experience. Reality Mixer of the Year, this is the person who has taken the mixed reality experience of holograms and virtual reality and mixed it together in an app and in a way that really is innovative. And then the Core Maker of the Year. These are the things that go beyond the norm, beyond the normal interface to integrate in Windows, like in drones, gardens, IoT, robots, things of that nature. And then in addition, they're giving out a Ninja Cat of the Year award. It's a special recognition, and this will not be, those other ones I mentioned are being voted on by the public right now. So if you go to the link in the show notes, RSVP, sign in, you'll be able to vote on those four categories. They have already whittled down a list of people and apps that are available are eligible for that voting. The Ninja Cat of the Year, on the other hand, is picked by the Windows team, and it will be a developer or experience that we believe most reflects what Windows is all about, empowering people of action to do great things. So you can do that. But anyway, that's where that new Ninja Cat character artwork came from, was on that Windows award site, that developer award site. And funny enough, you right-click on the image and you could save it separately. So I that's why I built the wallpapers with the Windows 10 stuff, just to have a little bit of fun, and shared it via Twitter yesterday. So I think that's pretty cool that they're doing this new developer-related focus like that. They haven't said anything about what it is beyond just simple recognition, though, if there is. Another story from President Brad Smith at Microsoft talking about the International Treaty on Nation State Acts, that there is a growing consensus that something needs to be done to stop this kind of stuff from happening and to take action on it. because the virtual hacks and things like that that impact countries and elections and things of that nature are very, very serious. So that Microsoft is continuing that push in order to make that put that up front as an upfront issue that needs to be addressed in this day and age. Saw a story that Lloyds Banking Group is going to start to test Windows Hello for customer online banking logins. I think this is awesome. Taking that that biometric login process, whether it be your fingerprint or your facial recognition on your Windows 10 system, and adding that to a layer of security to your bank. How secure is that? I mean, those are things that are not easily hackable and therefore would give greater security to your bank login. I hope to see more and more services take advantage of these things. Microsoft has put the APIs and things in place for people to build this into their web applications and their websites and their web portals. Just people have got to do it. And it looks like maybe Lloyd Banking Group might be the first one. And this could very well get people started down that road and therefore give us more of that kind of a security option. Okay, let's see. OneNote. I don't know. I think I may mention OneNote every week, and I could if I don't. OneNote has been on a journey. And, you know, I talked about my own journey with OneNote and how I was very much a paper-based process of doing this podcast and things like that several years ago. And then sat down about 7 years ago, I guess it is, in a session at a Microsoft MVP summit and learned more about OneNote and made the change. I'm paperless now when it comes to this podcast. I don't have to print out a piece of paper to be able to do this show. And it also helps simplify the whole process of creating my show notes page and things of that nature. So this article right here talks about, it's by Peter O'Kelly, who talks about that it's gone mainstream. And I think OneNote's been mainstream for a while, but this is a great point that, you know, it has grown, it has matured, and it really is making an impact in education, in offices and enterprises as a standard part of every Enterprise Office 365 subscription. It comes free on Windows 10. The app, the UWP app, comes free on Windows 10 to get people installed and using it. Plus, we can access it on any of our devices. So OneNote is truly a tool that if you haven't started using it, you should start diving in and just check it out, because it really, really is a great thing to have in your tool bag. Microsoft's FanFest for E3. Had a little bit of an issue. They had some kind of system issue, and it started issuing too many tickets for the number of access passes they had for this event. And if you don't know what Xbox Fan Fest is at E3, it's a huge Xbox Microsoft party to celebrate the hardware and the software, the games that are coming out at E3, which is the Electronics Entertainment Expo that's held each year in Los Angeles. Well, they had some issues with that, and they've had to kind of, it started on the 19th. There were issues. They identified it, and they stopped it. And they reset everything, took everything out. Nobody had anything reserved or given or gifted. And they will do it again next week. There's links to the pages on here that will help you understand what's going on and when you can re-sign up to be eligible for that possibility. Speaking of Xbox Game Pass is something they have been testing in the Insider program on the console for a few weeks now. Pretty neat, very much along the lines of Electronic Arts EA Access, where you get certain games that are free if you're subscribed. It's $9.99 a month. There is no kind of year deal like they do for EA Access. I mean, EA Access is unbeatable at $40 a year. So they say this will have a couple hundred games in it. It's already testing with about 100 or so. A lot of Xbox 360 compatible games, backwards compatible games are in there, as well as some AA titles. So that testing is going to come to an end soon because they're getting close to that launch, and I'm assuming that's going to be the 1705 launch, because Xbox, I told you before, does their feature releases a little bit different. They had 1703, they've had 1704, and now 1705, which we're testing in the Insider program, will be launching officially sometime next month, most likely. And then Insiders will continue to get little incremental updates and be able to test new features leading up to the September cycle of releases for Windows. Steve Ballmer back in the news this week about doing a little bit of work. He created a site called USA Facts, where you can look up data about how your government spends money, uses money, and data facts like that. So pretty neat. That's kind of a project he has taken on. It's funny, I've got links here to an interview on GeekWire, and it's a video-based interview, but in the photos you can see he's still got a Surface Pro, I think it was a Surface Pro. He's still got a Surface Hub sitting in his conference room. So this man, even though he's no longer at Microsoft, still very much embraces everything about Microsoft. you know, and what it does and what it's capable of doing with the hardware and the software. IoT, Microsoft released a new software as a service this week, or at least in its, you can sign up and get early information about it. It's called IoT Central, Microsoft's IoT Central, and it will be a software as a service that customers can use to hook up with Microsoft partners and Microsoft about implementing Internet of Things devices and capabilities within their company. And it's built on Microsoft Azure, and it's there to help you not only just manage those devices, but also collect the data, analyze the data, and use the data for the value that it's supposed to bring to you when it comes to implementing these types of features. Let's see. This was just a funny story. You know, there's a blog at Microsoft. There's this guy there who's been blogging about, it's called The Old New Thing. His name's Raymond Chin. And I think I've mentioned his blog post in the past. But if you've never kind of checked out his blog, you need to. And I've got a link to the story here. In fact, I'm going to it's just a neat story because it's about a customer back in the days of Flight Simulator, right? And he was saying how the game was not matching the map. And he sent a note and eventually got kind of he looked into the issue. They felt the map in the Flight Simulator was correct. So he then contacted Bill Gates by email and asked him to look into this. And Bill sent it to the team and said, okay, look into this. And so they did. They checked everything. They rechecked everything. Everything in Flight Simulator maps was correct. And so they contacted the customer. And the customer said, you know, he was very happy that somebody was going to finally look into this. And the border between the two countries, you know, where it goes and that it wasn't correct in Flight Simulator. And they asked him, what map are you using? And the customer's answer was, I'm using the world map on my shower curtain. And they, in return, you know, dealt with that, I guess, in the best way they could. But interesting little backgrounds and stories and things like that. And I have another one from him a little bit later to talk about Windows Vista, which just went out of extended support a couple weeks ago. All right. No passwords. Microsoft accounts, the Authenticator app for Android and iOS was upgraded so that you could tie it to your Microsoft account and you would no longer have to enter passwords for those accounts. You would just get a prompt on the phone once they were connected that you would tap, kind of like the two-factor authentication that you can do, but it requires you to enter the password on your website, on the website, the portal you're logging into your Microsoft account with. But now what it will do is when you insert that password, it will send a prompt to your smartphone to the Authenticator app, and it will pop up that alert without you having to enter the password on your website once you've tied them together. And then you just have to tap one button to log in, which is awesome. Take an extra step out of the process, I think, is great. But guess what? Didn't roll out to Windows 10. Windows, by the way, remember I mentioned Microsoft To Do earlier? Apps rolled out to Windows 10 mobile, Windows 10 desktop, Android, iOS, and web all at once. So Microsoft certainly has the capability of shipping these apps and app updates to all platforms. For whatever reason, the Authenticator app, which is pretty good on Windows 10 mobile these days, and usually follows within a couple weeks, and we're waiting to see when that happens. But you know, that was just another nail in the coffin in the eyes of Windows 10 mobile fans and users that they didn't get the update before the other platforms got the update. Windows 10 ultralight PCs. This is what I was talking about earlier. Windows 10 mobile or Windows 10 on mobile, the on being the difference. These ultralight PCs with ARM chips are set for quarter four. What's funny is the Galaxy S8 that I'm going to get my hands on soon also has the same chipset that those devices will have for running Windows 10 on ARM. So it'll be interesting to see performance-wise how that works. So we know that that's happening. Windows 10 Cloudbook. Remember, I talked about that already. We think that it's going to be Windows 10 Cloud that we will see on this new clamshell laptop device revealed at the Microsoft Education event on the 2nd of May in New York City in just about 10 days. And we believe it fully is going to be the competitor to Chromebook, Windows 10 Cloudbooks. And, you know, I listened in on Brad Sam's podcast yesterday on his Sam's report, and he had a good point. These systems have to be self-healing. They have to be able to be fixed in an instant because you don't have time to wait for IT in order to keep teaching a student. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out about Windows 10 Cloud. I'm looking forward to get my hands on it and see how it works and how it all syncs together with everything else in the ecosystem. Remember I mentioned Raymond Chin. One of the other articles he published in the last couple of weeks, This is on from Chuck Walburn from Microsoft, who was around in the days of Windows Vista. And the reason I grabbed this one, this was not from the, you know, old things, new thing. The reason I grabbed this is because he made a great point in here. He said, if you love Windows 7 or Windows 10, remember to pour one out for the unloved older sibling that paved the way with a lot of blood, sweat, toil, and tears. And he's talking about Windows Vista. Because when Windows Vista was released, it was rough. We had Service Pack 1 came and things got pretty decent. And it was the catch-up work, the fixes that changed the way third-party drivers work, the way they cannot hook into the kernel, the way different functionality worked to run the system. All of those things directly impacted the development of Windows 7, even Windows 8.1, yes, even 8.1, and now Windows 10. And it's the reason why Microsoft can produce so much a better and more secure system when it comes to security. So I just thought that was an interesting link to stick in there as well. And this is another thing I love to see. If you're on XP or Vista, which are no longer in support, you do not get Firefox 53, the latest update to the Firefox web browser, because you are out of date. It's so good now to see these companies, or at least the start, a trickle of these companies deciding to not support the older versions of Windows that aren't supported anymore. Why do it? I mean, just let's get those off the plate. Let's get them off the scene and slowly and surely shut down so that they are not out there being vulnerable because they're not getting updates. I mentioned the Microsoft Security Readiness Center on a regular basis, the Malware Protection Center log. They've got another story this week about combating Java malware with machine learning in real time. You've got to mark them. They've got an RSS feed. You need to mark these guys and read what they write because it is so insightful to learn how they handle security and how they're using all this artificial intelligence and machine learning to combat that stuff and keep systems safer and safer. Wanted to share with you, I shared a few weeks ago about the whole Star Wars vision thing with HoloLens, and now there's about building a telepresence app with HoloLens and Kinect, so that was an interesting story to grab an update for. Surface Studio and Surface Pro 3 both got updates this week for firmware. Surface Studio got one so that you can do the Hey Cortana wake up thing from Kinect to Standby, and then the Surface Pro 3's update was related to power management and things like that. Oh, let's see. We also had Time release their most influential people of the year, I guess it is, or current. And the list of 100 people have a lot of tech luminaries in there, including Bill Gates' wife, Melissa, for some of the influential stuff they're doing and philanthropy. And lots of other people in the tech world are also listed on that list if you want to catch up with that. Big news this past week about Google building an ad blocker into all versions of Chrome. There's varying reactions to this. There's hot takes on what Google's ad blocking feature could mean for online advertisers and publishers. They say that it is the entire group of them: Microsoft, Mozilla, which is Google, or Mozilla is the Chrome browser. It could be all these companies getting together to determine what are and are not good ads. And then how is this going to impact ad buyers and publishers who want to coordinate? You know, I talked last week about how websites are getting more and more aggressive when it comes to you visiting with an ad blocker. Some are giving you, a screen to whitelist them, and then you get to look at the story. Some of them aren't even giving you access. And that's when I sometimes will go to other sites. I mean, give me a good reason to not have you in my ad block list. So there's lots going on when it comes to ad blocking, and not just extensions. We're talking about built-in, automatic, part of the browser type stuff here. Let's see, a couple of three last little things I wanted to mention. This year, if you have not been paying attention, there is a total solar eclipse going to happen on August 21st. It's going to run from the northwest of the United States all the way to the southeast. Lots of opportunity for people to see a total eclipse that have never had the chance. I'm personally going up to South Carolina to be right in the middle of totality myself, although it's going to be a partial eclipse here in Northeast Florida. I'm going to go see the total thing that day. Here's an interesting little note, and this is why you got to be thinking about this now. In Oregon, they opened up 1,000 campsites in the eclipse zone to encourage more people to be able to come and camp out and see the eclipse. 90 minutes, and those 1,000 campsites were gone. I mean, it may be too late to book yourself a room in the middle of totality, but it's time to start searching. It's time to figure out where it's passing closest to you at and find yourself somewhere, because you know what? Traffic that day is going to be a madhouse anywhere in and out of the totality of that zone. It is going to be hard to find space, so you might have to drive in. You might have to get there early, all kinds of things. But this is an opportunity you just don't ever get very often, so you got to go check it out. I read a story that Apple is going to dismantle their glass cube at the Fifth Avenue store. Apparently, they're expanding. The store's already shut down as I read the story. I was kind of thinking, oh, I need to go look at this glass cube. I've never done it in any of my visits to New York City. It looks like the store's already closed and moved, and they may already be working on taking down the glass cube. So if I have time while I'm in New York for the May event, I may go try to track it down and get a picture or two and share that on social media. Just, you know, that's a pretty neat thing. You see a lot of pictures of it, but something to see in person. And then the last thing I want to talk about today is the risks involved in Kickstarter, Indiegogo, any of these projects that are out there looking for your support and your finances. Unfortunately, they can go very, very wrong. A company called Plastic had decided they were going to build a credit card that you would be able to store multiple credit cards on and access the cards as you need to. It would have, biometric login and things of that nature. But you would have all your cards on one card with secure access, and you could use them as you needed to. Well, after what, $9 million raised in their Kickstarter and other funding, they have attempted to get more funding without shipping a single item to any backer or supporter. They are filing for bankruptcy this week. That means those supporters, those people who donated whatever part of $9 million are out of their money. And I don't know if you, I mean, I guess if you're a full-time investor in Kickstarters, that might be a business. You could write it off as a business loss. But this is the inherent risk when it comes to these kind of things, is there's no guarantees. It's kind of like the stock market. You know, at least with the stock market, if the stock starts to tank, you can sell and get out and at least recoup part of your money. With this and others that you've read about over the last couple of years, you don't get squat. You don't get anything back. It's gone. You're done in that company. Your money is history. So be careful, be smart. It's an investor world. It's a risk-taking world. You have to be willing to take that risk and be willing to lose your money if you don't get the product. Like anything, there's always risk involved. You just got to be smart and savvy about it. Do your research. And even then, things won't go sometimes as planned. All right, so there you go, episode 226 in the books. Going to get it up and online and shortly here on this Saturday, the 22nd of April. Like I mentioned, we'll be back with you again next Saturday for the show before the trip to New York, and then we will certainly have lots of news coming out of New York, and we'll talk about some details of that next week. So until next time, stay safe out there and keep all your systems up to date. Take care.